Welcome. It's Saturday morning. Once again, time to sit down, grab that cup of coffee, and join us for The Beacon. It's the end of the month. It's Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Yes, all kinds of things are going on. I'm Bill Jurek.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
Back from Hawaii.
Aloha.
And are you glad to be back?
I could have used another few days out there.
Really?
Not that I'm complaining. That sounds, yeah, no. I mean,
do you surf?
I don't.
Boy, those waves out there are just phenomenal.
I look at those people and I wish that I did. I mean, and they say, surfers say that there's such a high that goes along with surfing too.
I bet you there is.
I know.
I bet you there is. What do they call it? Riding the curl or whatever it is.
Yeah, sure, they say that.
You know, and then you're in the tube and all the rest of that stuff.
So it's awesome.
It looks like fun, but God, I can't even swim.
I know.
Let alone get out there and
go and get
surfing.
On a surfboard. It was phenomenal.
You went to law school, you said.
For a year. Yeah, I did.
And your foot fell asleep and you made a fool of yourself at the library.
That was it.
Was the whole thing.
The end of my law school career.
Jerry Zivick,
yes.
Who advertised on our program for years, mm-hmm. He's now into semi-retirement, and he used to come on and talk to us about Social Security issues. Well, he's got a great idea for a program, and he comes on our show and he talks about things that are going on with Social Security, whether it be disability, whether it be, you know, the conventional retirement Social Security, but anything that relates to it. He has got a couple that's joining him on the program. Yeah, they are the Lambs. Their name is Lamb. They live out in California.
Uh-huh.
And Jerry is going to, I let him do a lot of the interviewing because it got, you know, pretty detailed and pretty much onto a personal level.
Cool.
With the couple. So we're going to hear that. It's a rather lengthy interview, but it's really, really good. I think you'll get a lot out of what he has to say and how to deal with the Social Security, mm-hmm. the whole thing, because it's such a mess.
Yep.
It can be. Although, you know what? Knock on wood. I got to tell you, I never had a problem.
That's great.
I have never had a problem.
Good.
You know, other people talk about stories of having problems with, like, a paratransit, or they have stories with Social Security or something. I can honestly say, sitting here, that I have never had a problem with any of that
stuff. You know what? I think there's a lot of people within the, you know, the
community
and the cog of the machine that really do want to be helpful and really do try their best to make it an easy process. The process itself is not easy, and there's a lot that can, you know, there's a lot of mishap that can happen. But I think people, you know, in general, really do want to help to maneuver the system.
And, you know, and the thing is this. Don't yell at those people who answer the phone. They have nothing to do with what information they're trying to give you, except they have the information.
They're the messengers.
They're the messenger, and they always get shot.
Yep, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
So, but I think you'll enjoy this segment coming up here.
Good.
And then it's the second part of your two-part series.
My ode to coconut oil.
Ode to coconut oil. Yeah. That's right. You're calling the...
You always just, like, look so deflated when it comes to my segment.
Well, you know, it's all that kale stuff and everything.
Yeah.
You know,
but what can I tell you?
Although I do like coconut.
Yeah.
I do. I like coconut.
Every time I do a segment, you're like, oh, actually, that's it. I do like that.
That does sound pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, so.
They'll convert you yet.
Well, don't listen.
What?
Don't bet on it.
Yeah.
You know.
Old dog, new tricks and all that good stuff.
I do love my... Thanks.
What?
The old dog, new tricks.
Talking about Lincoln.
I do love my White Castle hamburgers.
Ugh,
so anyway.
Not judging. I'm not judging.
Oh, of course not.
Not having a judgmental inner dialogue in my head.
She'll just move into the other studio. You know, talking about that. Anyway, we'll get started with Jerry Zivick and what you could have had if you gone to law school.
Yes.
All right. The name of the show is The Beacon. I'm Bill Jurek.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
Stick around. It's going to be a really interesting and fascinating segment coming up next.
If you have lost the place where you're living and are staying in a motel, hotel, campground, your car, a shelter, or you're sharing a home with other people because you just can't afford to pay rent, let us help you get your kids in school and receive other educational benefits and free meals. Illinois is looking out for the welfare of families, children, and youth experiencing homelessness. Call 1-800-215-6379 and let us help you get your child in school. The number again is 1-800-215-6379.
One of our frequent guests on the Beacon program is Jerry Zivick. Jerry and I, for those of you who haven't been listening to the Beacon for a long period of time, have to understand that Jerry and I began our relationship when Jerry was still in practice here in Chicago and decided to advertise on our Beacon radio program. And one thing led to another, and he turned out to be a wonderful friend. So I just want to give a little bit of background to that and introduce him to you. Jerry, how are you?
I'm doing good, and actually, it's a very mutual feeling, Bill. You're a wonderful friend back to both Judy and I, and we appreciate all of the kindnesses you've always extended to us.
Well, you know what? That, like you said, that works both ways. We're going to talk about something, because when we were mulling over what we should talk about in this segment of the program, you came up with a great idea, and that is to take a look at an actual case study and see what the process was to get through the maze that can be Social Security disability. And so I don't sound like an idiot asking questions, I'm going to rely on you this time to kind of lead us through and down the path of what it finally resolved in a positive way for John and Bobby Lamb, who are currently out in California. So, Bobby and John, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's good to have you with us. Now, I'm going to let Jerry take over, and he can tell how this whole process began.
Well, before I start, I want to share with everybody here that I was reading an article just last week about the delays in the disability process, of which we're going to talk about how long it took John and Bobby to resolve the case, but they're worse than they've ever been. You're talking about an average of over 500 days from the time you apply until the time your case actually gets decided if you're denied initially, and it's just terrible,
yeah,
these delays.
Well, all right. Well, nothing gets better. It always seems like it gets worse, you know, when it comes to dealing with something like SSDI. Do you think they do that just for discouragement, so people will give up?
I don't know, actually. You know how.
Sure.
How I can be, I'm jaded. If they plan to do it on purpose, it wouldn't happen. So I have to think part of it is ineptitude. Part of it is disabled people have a very weak lobbying presence.
Right, right. So I'll let you have at it now. You can tell us about. It's Bobby who had the case with the SS with Social Security, right?
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
Bobby, we talked before, so I know you and John are okay. So you applied for Social Security disability, correct?
Uh-huh.
All right. Now, before you had applied for disability, you had always been a working woman.
Yes.
All right. And then you had a number of medical problems. Do you want to share any of those problems with us, or do you want to just gloss over them?
Just gloss over them.
Okay, that's fine. So you had a combination of problems that basically stopped you from working on a full-time basis.
Yes.
All right. And You apply. How old were you when you had to stop working?
I think you were about, 62.
62.
Right.
All right. So you were you're already at an age where you almost could have taken early retirement, but you decided to go for disability. And one of the advantages for applying for disability instead of taking early retirement is that you'll actually get a larger retirement benefit, because when you're found disabled, it's as if you worked all the way up until your retirement age. So by doing this, you got yourself a larger benefit. You realize that when? Did you realize that when you applied?
Yes.
Okay. So you went. How did you apply for Social Security? Did you do it online? Did you do it on paper? Did you go to the office?
I went to the office.
All right. And did they help you? Did they help you do the paperwork?
Yes.
All right. And did you bring any medical records or anything to the district office?
No.
Okay, and did they say that they were going to get any of these records?
I don't recall, Jerry, if I can jump in for a second.
Sure, please do.
My best recollection was that, after Bobby was hospitalized in intensive care for about 4 days, she had aspiration pneumonia, and it was after that it became pretty apparent she wasn't going to be going back to work, and she exhausted disability benefits through California. But anyway, when she finally went for the Social Security, I think by that time she was 62, maybe almost 63, and I remember they said, well, you know, the disability part of it, it's going to be a while. Anyway, she said, well, I just want to take my early retirement then. So she kind of applied for both, I think, at the same time is what I recall.
And that's fine. So you applied back in early 2011. And how long did it take them until they could actually reach a determination? Do you remember?
Well, they denied the disability part pretty much right off the bat, you know.
Okay.
And we were actually warned that could be the case, I can't say that they absolutely deny every claim right from the get-go, but we sort of got that impression. And then
people gave you that impression. People at Social Security gave you the impression that they were going to deny her?
Well, no, this is from talking to friends.
Okay.
But it certainly bore out almost immediately that we got the notice, the disability is denied, but the Social Security benefit at that time did go through, and she started to receive that because she was early retirement eligible. She was over the minimum age, you know.
So let me ask you a question. Let me jump in here for a second. So, Jerry, because she applied for both and was approved for the early retirement, when she eventually got the disability compensation, did it go back to what her full Social Security benefit would have been had she been able to work to 65?
It's as if she worked up until her retirement age.
I gotcha. Okay.
Instead of a reduced benefit, she got a complete benefit. Let me ask a question, John and Bobby. Did Social Security tell you could apply for both, or did you know to do that on your own?
Do you remember, Bobby?
No, I don't remember.
Okay. So they turned you down, and then after that, you had the right to file for reconsideration. Did you guys file for reconsideration on your own, or did you seek some professional help at some point?
No, we filed... As soon as we got the notice, I think it tells you have 60 days to object or whatever it is, or maybe it's 30. I think it's 60. Anyway, we immediately turned that back in and said, no, we're appealing this decision because we really felt that Bobby was just not up to going back to work after all she'd been through, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, during that period of time, did this cause both you and Bobby or Bobby to be upset or emotionally overwrought?
Yes, it caused me to be overwrought.
Okay. Did you think it, when they turned you down, did you think about quitting at that time, Bobby? Not appealing it?
No, I wanted to appeal it.
Okay. And did this cause any friction at this time between you and John?
Well, I mean, we just knew that this was what we were up against.
All right. So you filed for reconsideration on your own. And when did you get some professional help to assist you with this whole process?
Well, I had known some people at work that had gone out on medical disability from my job, and I contacted one of them, and I believe he's the one that referred me to, you know, the Zivic law firm. And at the time, I think the address or the phone number I came up with was in Chicago, and also it's since affiliated with another firm.
But basically, okay. So you came to me for some assistance, and at that point in time, did having some professional assistance, did that give you any kind of emotional relief?
I
thought, well, at least we're going to give this our best shot because we're going to have some professional help, you know.
Right. And all during this period of time when you were waiting for, when after Social Security denied you and you applied for reconsideration, Bobby was constantly getting medical care, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
And also during that period of time while you were waiting, Bobby also had in-home assistance to take care of her daily activities most of the time, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So did that cause you to scratch your head and wonder why is Social Security denying Bobby when she can't even take care of her daily activities or take care of just the two of you at home?
Yeah, that was curious because I thought certainly after, you know, meeting her and talking to her, they would possibly see, you know, what some of the complications were. But actually the first person that she interviewed with, which was, you know, earlier on, was closer to the initial denial. That was just some kind of sit-down interview, and you know, I dropped Bobby off and picked her up, and, you know, I don't know what happened in that interview, but I just know that it was the flat denial, you know, just early on denial that there's nothing going on here, no disability for you, you know.
So go for the early retirement. Let me interrupt for a second. We're talking to Bobby and John Lamb, along with Jerry Zivic, who is a regular on our program to talk about issues that are related to Social Security and also to Social Security disability. We're listening to what a, I don't know if you want to say, Jerry, would I be wrong in saying a typical scenario as far as going in for collecting, or would this be out of the ordinary, the situation?
Well, it's
that
not out of the ordinary. It's fairly common that you apply, you get denied, and there are huge wait times.
That's what I was going to get at, too, is how long was the whole experience? We were talking off the air about it, but this took what seemed like an eternity for someone who needed to receive the benefits.
Okay, so to fast forward, you guys were turned down on reconsideration, and then you applied for a hearing before an administrative law judge. And do you remember how long it took to get that hearing after you were turned down on reconsideration?
That took a very long time.
Over a year?
I believe, well, you could help me with that. When we first, the first time we went to court was, it seems like almost about a year ago. And then they said that we had to come back again. And so probably a good year and a half from the initial denial until we started looking for help. We got some help. We talked with you, and then we got a notice of that first hearing as an appeal hearing, and that was, I'm going to say, maybe a year and a half.
I think it was closer to 18 months, maybe even longer, till you actually got a hearing date. During that period of time, as you were getting close to the hearing, Bobby, was that giving you a lot of anxiety and concern?
Yes.
Okay. Did you ever think of dropping the case?
Yes.
Okay. In fact, did you and I have discussions about that?
Yes.
Okay, and you wanted me to drop the case, if I remember correctly. Is that correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay, but I convinced you to keep going, and are you glad that you kept going?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and when you were thinking about it, as the hearing got closer, did this cause you to become physically ill?
Yes.
Okay, and did this cause any problems, you know, at home between you and John? Any kind of friction?
Just a little bit of friction.
John, how do you feel about that? Is that accurate?
It was, you know, leading up to that first hearing, Bobby was, you know, very anxious and just really didn't want to go through. We had that discussion more than a couple of times about, I just want to drop this, and of course, you know about that, but literally on the way to that first hearing, we had a major issue that we almost didn't make it because she just was physically ill with the concept of having to go in and fight this out. She was not well, and you know, my tenacious attitude was, no, we're going to do this. Look, we'll make it happen. I called the place. I said, look, we might be a little late. I think I called you and maybe put you on alert that we might be a little late, but as you know, we got there and we met you, and then we had our first day in court there.
Can I ask you a question?
We had our day in court, and did you feel like the administration was well prepared to hear the case? You were in during the hearing, correct, John?
Yes, I was.
Okay, and did you feel that there was a lot of knowledge about the case, that the judge was familiar or not familiar with Bobby's issues?
I did not. I felt like I was kind of appalled that they said, okay, we're going to have to investigate and come back and do this again. And I thought, oh my gosh, are you kidding? You know, we've waited this long, and now we're scheduling another thing. And how long out was that, Jerry? Another 6 months?
6 or 7 months. But before we get there, what Social Security hires people through doctors to review records. They hire all kinds of medical experts for physical problems, for mental problems. And do you recall, was there a problem with one of the experts that had reviewed the case there?
I'm trying to recall exactly what the issue was, but...
correct me if I'm wrong. As I remember it, one of the medical reviewers of the case, when I investigated whether or not this person was licensed, we could not find that this person was a licensed medical professional.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And was the judge very happy when that objection was raised?
No. And wasn't there also an objection that the initial person who interviewed Bobby on the original denial did not even show up as an employee anywhere somehow?
I don't remember anything like that. I just remember the licensing issue, and so the judge was not happy when I raised that objection. And if you remember, the judge said, you're the only person that's ever raised that objection.
Well, yeah, I do remember that. The judge seemed a little irritated that you were actually doing your job, you know?
he was doing what he was supposed to. Jerry, let me interrupt for a second. You and I have talked in shows past that a lot of times the administrative judge is not from the area, that the or that it's the hearing is held elsewhere, that outside of the jurisdiction of where the people live or the clients live. Was this the case with the Lambs?
No, she was a local judge.
Okay.
And it was odd that nobody had ever raised that objection before.
Wow.
So what happened was they took some testimony, and they were going to investigate the issue of the licensing, if I remember correctly. Is my memory correct, you guys?
Yeah, I think the one other thing they wanted too was they wanted some complete medical regarding her, you know, issue with the ICU and the emergency room and all that.
Right.
And there was, I think, two or three different records that we went around to round up from, you know, medical records that apparently weren't in the record at that time.
And if my memory serves me correctly, the medical records that you had in file exceeded 500 pages, if not more.
Wow.
Is that your recollection of that too, Jen?
Yeah, it was a lot of stuff, and it was from...
We had over 500 pages of evidence, which is an extraordinary amount of evidence, Bill.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I'm just overwhelmed when you said 500 pages, for crying out loud. Wow.
How many medical appointments had Bobby been to, John? Do you remember? I can't.
Appointments, no, because she was under regular continuous care with her doctors. So
I mean, but to the doctor, I mean, by appointments, medical care with a doctor, this or that. There was, I think, an extraordinary number of that, over 30 or something like that.
Yeah, over certainly over time. I mean, we would be back to the doctor just with regular visits, you know, like once a month or and there's a few different doctors. You know, there was a neurologist. There was the psychology side of it, and then the actual physical ailments. You know, it was just a lot of stuff. And
you got to read a lot of.
Well, there's no disability here. I think their questioning went along the lines of, you know, can you do this? Can you do that? You know, and it was really basic stuff. You know, can you pick something up and take it over and set it on a table or whatever? It was kind of weird, their approach to what they consider disabled and what they don't, you know?
Oh, so but she had been to a large number of doctor's appointments, over 500 pages of medical evidence, yet they still wanted more.
Wow.
And did the judge say, we're going to take care of this real quickly and we're going to move this forward? Do you remember that being said?
I remember her saying, yeah, we're going to, you know, I got the impression kind of like 30 days maybe or something. I had no idea it would extend as long as it did.
And how long did it go until there was an additional hearing? Months?
It was months before
was
we
months.
Got the notice. And then after the notice, there was still a couple more months till we got there, you know?
And how were you doing there during this period of time, Bobby? Were you real happy about all of this?
Weren't happy about waiting.
No, I wasn't happy about waiting.
And did you also want to stop the process again?
Yeah.
And did you not want to participate in the additional hearing?
I didn't want to repeat the initial hearing, no.
Okay, so you wanted to quit, and actually we worked it out where you did not have to go in. You were allowed to phone in from home. Is my memory correct on that?
Yes.
Okay. And at that final hearing, that it's called a supplemental hearing,
mm-hmm.
how they had an expert witness, a medical expert witness on the phone as well, how long did that hearing take?
It was pretty quickly, but Jerry, I should mention, we did actually, Bobby and I went to that supplemental hearing.
Oh, you guys were there?
We were there. It was you that was on the phone.
I thought we all were. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. You know who else was on the phone? Was their witness, who pretty much put this thing to bed in short order. You know, he wasn't on the phone that long. I'd say 5 minutes, maybe.
Okay, so the hearing with the preliminaries and the ending stuff, you were in and out in 10 minutes or less. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. I would say so, yeah.
Yeah,
you know, just as a side note, mm-hmm. It's not really relevant to anybody but us, but I was so traumatized from the first hearing that we literally got a hotel room near the courthouse so that we wouldn't have, you know, in L.A., sometimes the commute,
mm-hmm.
especially depending on the time of day, can be kind of brutal. I'm sure in Chicago, too. But anyway, we got a hotel room that was relatively close to the hearing place so that we, you know, could get up and get ready and get over there without a huge drive like we had the first time when Bobby got so sick on the way to the hearing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So when it was all done, took 4 years. Around 4 years, am I correct about that?
Yes.
Okay, and they paid you all the way back to the time you said you got disabled, but did you feel this was all necessary to do all this?
Yes.
To go through the process, but let me rephrase it. Did you feel that Social Security treated you correctly during this period of time?
No.
Okay. And don't you think they could have paid this years before they ultimately paid this?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And luckily, you guys were lucky that John had a job where he could bring money in. If you would not have had the money or the resources, what would you guys have done for food and shelter during this period of time?
If we'd have been dependent upon that, heavily dependent on her check, I think we would have definitely been even more stressed out and certainly gone without certain things. I mean, finally getting the result, I remember the judge, it wasn't even completely clear in the hearing other than I heard the word favorable, and I thought, well, that must apply to Bobby, so I think that's a good thing, you know.
Yeah, but 4 years to go through this. Right now, then, technically, she's eligible for regular SSI, or Social Security benefits, then.
Retirement. Did you transition to retirement, Bobby?
Yes.
Okay. So the money is the amount of benefit it should be the same between the disability and the retirement. It's just called something else.
Right. Amazing.
Yeah, there was actually a notice that came that said you're going off of I'm trying to remember exactly how it's worded, but basically it says your one end benefit is ending and your other benefit is starting, and the starting benefit is what it should have been from the beginning of this case if had they granted her disability then, you know.
Right.
And of course there was a lump sum catch-up payment that was made as well. So
it's amazing how you can get caught up into that system and that. Well, you know, John and Bobby, thank you for joining us on the program and sharing the story. Jerry, for your expertise on being able to handle this, because you were there firsthand in that. And what people should do is actually get themselves some counsel, because Social Security, in many instances, can make it very, very difficult for you to get what you're entitled to and what you deserve.
That's very true, but I think what you have to realize is you can get some assistance, but you have to be a consumer
right
when you're doing this. You have to make sure that you're getting assistance that's valuable and trying to do something for you. But you also have to realize there are huge backlogs. There are over a million cases pending right now.
Wow.
Disability.
Well, and not enough judges to go around for like one-third of that even, or one-half of that.
Well, it's not just an issue with judges. There's staffing, and yeah. you can question about the whole process, because ultimately, Bobby, not that you're an older woman, Bobby, but Bobby was already in her 60s
when
she had multiple problems, and they're saying that she could work. So the initial determination was very flawed.
Yeah, to begin with, from the beginning. Well, listen, we'll pick it up next time. And again, thanks to everyone for being on the program. Bobby and John, thank you so much. Enjoy that nice California like Jerry's enjoying the nice Florida weather.
Thank you, Bill and Jerry, both.
And,
thank you, John and Bobby. We really appreciate you sharing your story. And if anybody's listening, I am not practicing anymore. This is just a story to help people understand the process.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks so much, everybody. The show's The Beacon. We'll be back with more after this.
Hi, everyone. This is Alex Trebek, the host of Jeopardy. If your question is, how can someone who is blind enjoy the latest magazine writing and not have to pay a penny? Then the answer is Choice Magazine Listening. Every other month, we'll send you hours of stimulating, unabridged articles, short stories, and poetry from writers such as Russell Baker, Derek Walcott, Joyce Carol Oates, Bill Moyers, and Margaret Atwood. These free special speed cassettes are sent to anyone unable to read because of physical limitations. If you're interested, write today to Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050. We'll also tell you how to get the necessary free Library of Congress talking book player. So write Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050. Or call 516-883-8280. That's 516-883-8280. Thank you.
This is the story of Daniel, who was born 2 months early. His lungs weren't ready. His heart wasn't ready. His parents could only hope that one day he would leave the hospital healthy, and they would all live happily ever after. Daniel's is just one of the more than 500,000 stories of babies born prematurely last year. You can help the March of Dimes stop premature birth and bring more babies home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.com. Working together for stronger, healthier babies.
So we visited with Jerry Civic.
We did.
And that was a very interesting topic. And that may become part of the show.
Oh, that would be great.
Not a short segment, though. Yeah. Not as long as we had before, but a short segment.
Well, he had the couple to interview, and, you know, and it's always great.
Well, he's
going to
do that, though.
Good.
That's going to be part of it. He's going to always find some people that are interesting to have on and talk about their horror story that they had gone through.
Okay.
So we're just...
Aww. You know, I mean, not good that people are going through horror stories.
No. Especially not when it comes to having a genuine need
right.
for the Social Security.
Right.
Now.
Yes.
We have to talk about your segment.
Yes.
And we're talking about coconut oil.
Yes, my ode to coconut oil.
We started last week where mm-hmm. you told us all of the other things that you can do with coconut oil.
Right.
This week we're going to specifically talk about food and how it can relate to food, or do you have some other things?
No, it's similar to last week.
You know
week.
What? We'll let you get into
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Because at this point in time on the program, let us turn the beat.
Turn up the beat.
I like to eat apples and bananas. I like to eat apples and bananas.
So this week we're talking about, again, as we just reiterated, we're talking about part two of my ode to coconut oil. I have a big, big crush on coconut oil.
Oh.
So as I promised last week, we're going to be talking a little bit about coconut oil and weight loss. So it's interesting because coconut oil is fat, and it's a saturated fat. And I've certainly talked...
Know it well.
I've certainly talked on this show and in this segment in particular enough about, you know, the difference between good fats yep. and bad fats. So coconut oil is actually a good fat that is essential to our health and well-being. So, you know, it can be used as a weight loss, which is sort of counterintuitive to if I eat fat, I lose weight. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But again, right. kind of going back to the idea that fat does not make you fat.
Yeah, but there's good fat and bad fat,
exactly.
like you said, though. So,
yeah,
okay.
exactly. Right. So you got it. So unlike most saturated fats, this one is mainly comprised of medium chain fatty acids versus long chain fatty acids. Fatty acids.
good, real good.
I can join
my club.
I talk.
That's right.
So the difference there in molecular structure means that it doesn't get packed away as fat as easily, and instead is straight sent to the liver to be metabolized, which gives you a big boost in energy.
Mm-hmm.
And this energy in turn makes exercising easier, and the exercise helps you to lose weight. So it's not a direct, I'm going to eat coconut oil and lose weight, but it helps your body to metabolize so that you do have the energy to do what you need to do to take care of yourself.
Substitute that if you're going to fry up something or something like that?
Right.
No? Yes?
Yes. If you want to cook with an oil, use coconut oil to cook with.
What happened with the craze of peanut oil a few years ago?
I never, you know, that was probably before I was really in tune
to it. Could it have gone the way of the wind because of the allergies?
I think it's highly possible. Yeah, I think it's highly possible. And peanuts in and of themselves aren't great. I mean, they're okay. I mean, especially as a whole food, and if you have peanut butter that's just peanut butter or peanut butter and a little bit of sea salt, then it's okay. It's certainly better than the processed peanut butter that you buy. But peanuts in and of themselves are not the best option for a healthy snack. So that might, you know, there might be. But again, every superfood takes a backseat eventually.
I tried one of the things you had talked about earlier, and that's almond butter.
Yes.
It's very good.
I'm glad you like it.
I really did. It's very good.
I'm really glad you like it.
I have to quit picking on kale.
Yeah.
Because you have some good ideas here. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry.
And another way this actually works as a weight loss is it helps to suppress your appetite. So if you're craving something and, you know, it's going to be craving it, and I'm very familiar with that, if you have a tablespoon or two of coconut oil, it actually helps to suppress cravings.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I know. So there you go. There's the coconut oil correlation to weight loss. Huh. And so next, I'm going to talk about how coconut oil can help our little pups, too, because our, you know, our dogs are part of our families a lot of the time.
People have guide dogs, too, and that sort of thing. Yeah,
exactly. Right. So a lot of dogs sometimes have atopic dermatitis, gets bad allergies. Yeah, okay. Or they get goopy eyes or scabby ears. And this actually helps if you just do a topical treatment of the coconut oil. It helps to nourish the dry, irritated, or inflamed skin.
Really?
Yeah, and that is, you know, as a result of the allergies.
It's almost like the diaper, cradle cap.
Yeah, that's
theory.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So it doesn't cure them of allergies. Actually, some people have said that it gets rid of allergies completely for the puppies.
Yeah.
But it does help reduce the itching, which of course reduces their scratching, which helps them to heal. So if the pup chews their paws and stains them, you know, red, pink, or brown, it can help in that department as well with the paw chewing. And I think that especially in our weather, in our climate, when the puppies are out in the wintertime, they get salt on their paws.
And
coconut oil after a walk would be such a nice treat for your little puppy.
You should, and if you travel with a service dog, a guide dog, or any other type of service dog, if you just take it, sounds like if you just take a little bit with you,
right?
And when you come in from the outside, you just kind of wipe down. What I usually do with the dogs is I take a paper towel,
right?
Get it nice and wet with warm water, and then I pat down the paws.
Yeah,
and this sounds like it would be really good. You replace the oils that had gotten messed up because of the salt and the brine and all of that on the sidewalk.
Right.
And then it's got to be more comfortable, too.
I think so, too. And with water, too, water can still be drying. Yep. So even after it dries, their little paws are still cracked. But with the coconut oil, it will help to re-nourish, like you said, the oils or the aggravation from the salt.
Right.
So it would be a really nice treat for your puppy. So that's a topical, and you can actually also give your puppy a half a teaspoon a day and work your way up to a tablespoon for dogs if they need to maintain their weight or if they're having some issues, you know, like our friend Lincoln over there.
Yes.
And they usually go crazy for it. So
he has all kinds of issues.
Yeah, he does.
We have to take him to the therapist.
Oh,
you know, but
poor
no, I'm kidding. Listen, if you'd like to get any of the information about this week's edition of how the coconut oil can benefit you in more ways than you possibly can think. Improve your life. That's right. This week or last week, you can go to our website, which is?
We can go to either on Facebook at Chicago Beacon, or we're also on Twitter at Chicago Beacon.
Right. And then, again, we'll repeat the show on Chris Radio on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. So if you are a Chris listener, you can go online at the Chicago Lighthouse website and listen to this segment all over again.
You betcha.
Especially the end part of this segment.
And we'll be here.
We'll be back with more right after this.
That smells good.
Well, look who came out of his man cave.
Game must be over.
Oh, babe, just checking on you. And dinner.
Well, your stomach clock is fast. It's gonna be a while. How about some celery?
Nah, that's rabbit food. There must be something good in here.
Well, why don't you... why don't you...
You okay?
Oh,
honey!
It can happen anytime, any place, without warning. Fact is, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke. Many don't even know they're at risk. The good news is, if you or someone you love has diabetes, you can lower the risk. But it's up to you to ask your healthcare provider how. For more information, go to diabetesactnow.org. That's diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
1 in 6 of the wounded U.S. soldiers evacuated from Iraq and Afghanistan battle zones suffered eye injuries. That's the highest rate of eye injuries since the Civil War. The National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, NLS, part of the Library of Congress, is stepping up to help. NLS works with military hospitals, rehab centers, and groups such as the Blinded Veterans Association to make sure that service members who have sacrificed so much for their country can still experience the pleasures of reading. Through the free NLS Talking Book Program, eligible veterans have access to thousands of bestsellers, biographies, westerns, self-help books, and more, and a variety of magazines. Veterans receive priority service from NLS, but any U.S. resident who is blind, has low vision, or cannot hold a book because of a physical illness or disability may sign up for the program. To learn more about what NLS can do for you or a friend or loved one, visit www.loc.gov/NLS or call 1-888-NLS-READ.
Welcome back.
We're here and we are going to visit with those two gentlemen that are in the know when it comes to things that will help you live a more independent life.
You betcha.
Why am I being so straight with this introduction?
I don't know.
I don't either.
Goodness sakes. We got to, these guys better hype it up for us.
I mean, it's still the Rover boys over here, Tom Persky and Brian Hawkins. So let's find out what's going on. Knowing them, they probably burned the swing on a porch, you know, with the leaves last weekend. So
well, welcome into Tom's Corner. I'm Brian Hawkins. And good morning, Tom. How are you?
Brian, doing good. Doing good.
That's great. Now, this
Happy Halloween, by the way.
Oh, I forgot. Yes, it is Halloween.
You're right.
You got your costume all picked up?
I do. Yeah, I'm going to dress up as a chipmunk.
Oh.
You know the Chicago Bears, you know that C on their helmet?
Right.
Yeah, that's what that stands for, chipmunks.
I'll take pictures. We'll all want to see that. But this week, now last week we talked about bioptic telescopes and those who might be losing their licenses, and you have more information about driving.
Well, you know, it's really a hot topic. Recently, we've talked with a lot of folks who are near the verge of driving and not driving, and I talked about all the rules that are involved in a low-vision driver's license in the state of Illinois for what's called bioptic telescope or bioptic driving. I believe that there's a good website. I haven't gone there recently. I hope it's still there. It's called bioptickdriving.org. So bioptic is B-I-O-P-T-I-C driving, bioptickdriving.org. And this might give you a hint as to what these glasses look like, what the rules are. The rules are very strict, but some people really do qualify and so forth. So, you know, I think back of my own personal days when I was struggling with vision. Mm-hmm. One of the first things I noticed was that I could not function very well when there was a lot of sunlight or glare. Many people with macular degeneration have that trouble where the eye can no longer filter out glare. And so sitting in a restaurant, for instance, with my back to the window, I can see everything. If I'm facing the window, I can't see a thing. I can't see people's faces. Mm-hmm. I knock things over on the table, you know, and it's really crazy. So I think back to my little Volkswagen when I was in my early 20s, and I'm sitting at a stoplight, right? And the sun's in my eyes, and the light turns green. I can kind of see that. And so everybody starts to go. But then the guy in front of me maybe tapped on his brakes and came to a hesitation. And guess what? The old boom, right in the back, you know?
Yeah.
Because I didn't see his brake lights. And so I go on a couple of weeks later, the light turns green. Same thing. It's like boom, like that. And I'm thinking, this is not good, you know. My friends one day called me and told me a very similar story. I said, oh, they have a club for that. Now it's called the Rear Enders Anonymous. Because <You know? laughs> we had to laugh or cry. It was either one or the other. And the other thing we call it is the Right Turn Only Club. Because we know that we don't want to get in a high-speed accident turning left in front of somebody that we didn't see. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's amazing when I think back psychologically, mm-hmm, what you're going through when you're having to make a decision to give up that car. And that was really, really a hard one for me. I remember when I was working at the Wheaton Eye Clinic, and I was meeting with a patient, and I was telling him, I said, you know, it was one of the hardest things I had to do, but the fact that nobody took my license away, you know, you really ought to consider giving up your license. I told this fella flat out. I said, 6 months from now, you're going to be able to hold your head up high and say, look, I did this myself. Mm-hmm. My daughter, my son didn't take my keys away, you know.
How did you take it?
You know. So I thought I was, like, doing a really good job, right, of counseling him. So he came back for a follow-up visit, and he said, Tom, I decided to give up my license. And I'm thinking, wow, I'm really a good counselor. But he didn't tell me the story. And the story was, in the first visit, he was coming down the street, and it was a light snow that day. It was in the wintertime, and so there was snow on the ground, and he's coming past a little school that was right near our eye clinic, right?
Right.
And he saw a little child standing on the corner. So he said when he got to the corner, he stopped the car and he waved his hand, like, go ahead, go ahead. And the child didn't move. And so he waved his hand even harder, like, go ahead, go ahead. And the child didn't move. And he thought, I don't know what's going on. So he's put the car in park. And he said, I just went ahead and I got out and I figured I'll help this little child cross the street. And when I walked up to this green thing with a yellow top, which I thought was a child, it was a fire hydrant.
Oh, no.
So
that convinced him.
That convinced him that, yeah, maybe I shouldn't be driving. And that's one story that came to my mind. The other was a patient that I had, a woman who we had similar conversations, and she told me, this story where she was coming through downtown Wheaton, and she did not see that the gates were down for the commuter train, and she actually crashed through the gate. Okay. Oh. With her car. She had a big Oldsmobile or something, and had the presence of mind to throw it in reverse, and she got out of the way of a speeding train within like 5 or 10 seconds.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, this is what's so powerful, mm-hmm. is this thoughts that in our mind we think we can make it through. And psychologically, the denial or the not being able to admit that we have a handicap now. We have a, you know, we don't see ourselves that way. And,
right.
And how powerful that can be. So I often talk to patients directly about some of these stories and how you really ought to consider what it's like. So coming to a low vision consultation where we can meet with doctors and occupational therapists, you can meet with myself and some of our technology team. We have lots and lots of solutions for people, and we have lots and lots of hope. And we can talk frankly about some of these topics with you. And we can find out other things that are going on in your life, you know, mm-hmm. besides driving or not driving, about reading, about using the computer, about learning a smartphone, about learning a tablet. You know, smartphones aren't phones anymore. They're computers that can really help you to do any kinds of tasks. Reading, they can help you to identify the color of your clothing with little apps. You can identify your money. So you get all these solutions that are out there, and people need to know about them. So give us a call and find out more about it. Our retail store here in Chicago is 1-800-919-3375. 1-800-919-3375. Make an appointment. Come in. Just say you want to sit down. We have a table and chairs. And we can talk for an hour and show you many of the things. There's no charge for our first appointments with our team. Or if you want to see me directly, you can. In Glenview, you call 847-510-6200. 847-510-6200 if you live near Glenview, to the Chicago Lighthouse North. And they will sit down and show you many, many things that are out there to help you.
And there are tons of those things.
There are.
Now, what there isn't a lot of left, and that would be road shows. You've got one more for
We got one more coming up on November 10th, and it's going to be in Des Plaines, my hometown. And we're looking forward to seeing you from 10 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon. It's an open house. I think they even want me to stand up and give a little talk, which they did last time. But this is kind of a neat facility right in the corner of River Road. It used to be called the Heritage. Now it's called the Brookdale Plaza, right in the corner of River Road and the railroad tracks there at Northwest Highway. So if you live in the Northwest suburbs, come by, get to meet me and Luke and Eric and Sandra. Our team will help you and show you things that are out there to help. And then we're going to hibernate for the winter, and we might not be on the road again till March. So this might be a good chance to come and talk to us.
Yes, go see the show, folks,
right,
for the final show of 2015. Well, he's Tom Persky, of course. I'm Brian Hawkins, as always. This is The Beacon.
Chevy Checker. A new twist in the law makes it easier than ever to save on your Medicare prescription drug plan costs. So what are you waiting for? Go to socialsecurity.gov and apply for extra help. It's easier than learning the twist.
Well, that'll do it.
That's it.
I'm going to have... do you have a lot of trick-or-treaters at your house?
We have not too many.
Not too many?
There's a wave that comes through, and then it's quiet for the rest of the evening. Yeah.
And you eat the rest of the candy.
Pretty much. It's horrible. And, you know, we'll probably take... We haven't ever taken TJ trick-or-treating, so we'll probably take him out this Halloween for the first time.
Which will be Katie bar the door. Here he comes.
I know. He's already talking about all the candy. I ask him what he wants to be for Halloween, and he says, I want to get candy. So he's, you know, bypassing the whole... He actually wants to be a firefighter, but candy first. Candy is a priority, and then we'll dress up as a firefighter. Yes, yes.
Well, listen, I'll let you go home and get the kids ready for that. Thanks to Dr. Janet Slick, the executive director at the Chicago Lighthouse, for making our program possible over here. And we always want to hear from you, so you can notify us at those websites, which are?
On Facebook, we're Lighthouse Beacon, and on Twitter, we are also Lighthouse Beacon.
And you can also check out the program again Wednesday nights on Chris Radio at 7 o'clock. I'm Bill Jurek.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
Stick around. The Mighty House Guys coming up next, right around the corner, after a couple of messages in the news on Chicago's Progressive Talk.